She is the single best at making everything she touches better. Every person she knows better.
And now for your Western Conference All-Stars, from the Chicago Blackhawks, captain and last year's accuracy shooting champion,
45% of Republicans here say they could change their mind before the caucus.
They just wait and they kind of make up their mind at the last minute.
This is the day to choose.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It's 5:09. Today is Monday, February 1st, 2016. Welcome to a brand new month. It's Iowa Caucus Day as well. Remember to vote early and often. The Steve Cochran Show is live in Iowa all morning long, and we will have coverage of that throughout the morning. First up, though, your market intel. Chinese stocks fell today after a weak manufacturing report, while Japan extended gains following its central market's introduction of negative interest rate policy to boost lending there and spur growth. Other markets were mixed. An index based on a survey of factory purchasing managers fell in January. That's the lowest in more than 3 years. It's the latest sign of weakness for the world's number two economy. Analysts at Japan's Central Bank introduced a negative interest rate policy on Friday so that other countries might think about tightening their policy as well. Here in the U.S., though, Jefferies market strategist David Zervos says the decision by the Fed to leave the benchmark rate unchanged for now likely means a change of course moving forward.
I don't know that the Fed could have given you a much more dovish statement given the off-cycle meeting, but I read that statement as reasonably comforting that if things were to deteriorate, they are going to sit on the sidelines and watch and be reactive to anything that sort of gets in the way of their view that inflation is heading back toward 2% and that the labor market is continuing to heal.
U.S. stock markets posted their biggest gain in about 5 months on Friday. The Dow was up nearly 400 points, or 2.5%. Standard & Poor and NASDAQ also up about 2.5%. Benchmark U.S. crude oil fell to just $33 a barrel. It's trading right around there today. Other news, McDonald's, Oak Brook-based McDonald's, is pushing forward with its expanded breakfast with a new addition to the lineup. The favorite McGriddle is coming back. The world's biggest burger chain of the weekend says it's going to start offering that and biscuit sandwiches in 72 restaurants, starting first in Tulsa, Oklahoma, starting this morning. Microsoft is front and center at the Iowa caucuses. The software giant is behind the app that will be used to tabulate results tonight.
Past reporting systems were based around a network of automated telephone surveys and, as a backup, old-school paper forms, which were returned by mail. Across more than 1,700 precincts, with no real verification that the results entered were actually accurate, errors were bound to be made. As an example, a volunteer could mistakenly hit a phone key twice and incorrectly report 22 votes cast for a candidate when only 2 votes were actually counted.
And if you remember back to 2012, well, they got it wrong for the Republicans back then. Both parties are backing the system. That, by the way, was a video posted by Microsoft of the new system that will find the Iowa caucus managers using Androids and iPhones and iPads to tabulate the results and send them to headquarters. Bernie Sanders, among those who has concerns, he doesn't want Microsoft to be involved because of its involvement in Hillary Clinton and her campaign in 2008, big donations to her campaign. Microsoft's Daniel Lewin, though, says Sanders shouldn't be worried.
You know, we run many things at scale, including, you know, worldwide streaming events like the Olympics. We run millions of transaction per second closures for major financial institutions. So we're very comfortable with the scale of information, the small numbers that will be pushed around through the system. So from an internal and technical perspective, we're very confident.
The Republican Party in Iowa conducted a test, a full test of the system over the weekend, and says everything worked normally. So again, Steve Cochran and crowd will be live at the Iowa caucuses all morning starting at 6 o'clock here on 720 WGN. Well, what if I told you you could listen to the news and make money? Matt Towery is the author of News Vesting, a new book about how to listen to the news or watch the news and make money. Matt is with us this morning on The Opening Bell. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning.
Hi. You know, you just heard me kind of rattle through all of the intel this morning and all of the stuff going on. Is that all we have to do is listen to the news and find nuggets to invest?
Well, it's a little more complicated than that, but not so complicated that most folks couldn't do it. What we did is we merged sort of the two schools of training in law school and in competitive debate. And so we use those and then create what we call a sort of a flow where you're keeping up with news every day coming from the Internet and coming off of major sources like the Wall Street Journal and the like. And you'll see the major words and the major patterns of news pop up over and over again. Those are the ones you want to watch, and those are the ones you want to get ahead of, as we did in news vesting, as we did our one-year study where we actually used real money to see how it would work.
Well, we're going to get into this with a full conversation coming up. You're at Matt Towery, T-O-W-E-R-Y, on Twitter and also at newsvesting.com. The book is called Newsvesting. We'll continue our chat after we check traffic this morning.
Wall Street Now. A weak manufacturing report has driven down Chinese stocks while Japan extended its gains and European markets were mixed. U.S. investors are glad that January is over. A month of mostly lower numbers was capped by a big surge on Friday for the Dow's, the S&P 500, and the NASDAQ. Two major global banks, Barclays and Credit Suisse, are paying a combined $154 million to settle government investigations that they misled clients about being able to safely trade on their so-called dark pool financial exchanges. That settlement was reached in New York. A parts shortage has Toyota stopping its assembly lines in Japan for 6 days this month. The automaker says that stems from an explosion at a steel factory. And Elon Musk, co-founder of Tesla and SpaceX, has an idea for a high-speed ground transport system moving up to 30 people through a tube at 700 miles per hour. At a design contest over the weekend, a team of MIT students won, and now we'll get to build a prototype of the so-called Hyperloop. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 520. We're talking with Matt Towery, who is the author of News Vesting, a new book about using the news to help you make money in your portfolio. And Matt, before the break, we were talking about how, you know, if you listen to the news and you pick out certain things, you can find out where you might invest, I guess, is what you're leaning toward.
Well, yes, but you really have to have a very systematic way of doing it, which we explain in the book. It's not complicated, but you have to stay on that system every day, because what you don't want to do is wait until a news story is on every major network and on the front of every newspaper. By the time that happens, you've not probably gotten your opportunity. You actually lost your opportunity to take advantage of that news situation, either to get out or to adjust or to purchase or to make moves. And I'm not talking about day trading or whatever, but to position yourself in an effective way to take advantage of it, sometimes, many times, for years.
So, for instance, this is just crossing in our newsroom, and we haven't announced it yet, but there has been a bombing in Kabul this morning, and 10 people are dead. And also, there's a report that U.S. independent oil drillers are going to report huge losses later this morning before the bell. So when we hear stuff like that, what should we do?
Well, first of all, I'll give you a good example. Let's go with the oil. You know, actually, there was a glut developing, as you well know, in 2014, and very early in 2014. So we go way back in this. And if you were following that story in the various financial newspapers and the like, you wouldn't have been shocked when I think USA Today in early 2014 had a headline that said, you know, expect gas prices to go up again as folks hit the road this summer. Well, if you knew the other side of that, you would have understood that a glut was developing, and that gave you an opportunity, A, either to get out of all of these oil stocks, or B, to use it as an opportunity to buy them as they would plummet down, as news would hit. And then you can sell them as they would go back up, because for about a year and a half, they were a bouncing ball. I did that many times with ConocoPhillips, for example, and made pretty strong profits each time. But as you hear stories like this, for example, what we're hearing about the oil production and then, of course, the instability in Kabul, it's a following of news we've already heard. And what I would say is to this is that the bombing in Kabul goes to the whole section in my book where I said, look at how the world was on fire beginning about 2014, and the countries that were arming themselves up to protect themselves, not just from terrorism, but from the overall concerns of instability in the Middle East. And if you look at those defense stocks, big defense stocks, such as Lockheed Martin or Northrop Grumman, all of which I bought as part of this package when I was doing the book itself in the year I was doing newsvesting. All of those stocks went up double digits over the last year to year and a half, whereas the Dow and the S&P were flat. So if you read these things and see them, and just you don't panic, but you take advantage of opportunities, you'll find yourself going in the direction where news will actually inure to the benefit of your portfolio.
And that's a point that we need to make, because over and over again in our program, we've had experts on who say, whatever you do with your portfolio, don't panic every day and make knee-jerk changes. What you're book says is sort of take a long view of things and use those nuggets of information over time, right?
That's right. Occasionally there will be a short-term situation, the great example being the Ebola crisis that took place. When we learned that a woman had gotten off the plane, a plane, and was a nurse, and she turned in having Ebola several days later, it made pretty good sense that the airlines were going to take an incredible hit, and probably an unfair one, because they pretty much had control of the situation. The day that broke, I bought American Airlines. I held it. Now, I don't usually do this, for only 7 days. But I had about a $8 or $9 return on that stock in that very short period of time. And I did enough so that it would matter. And why do I mention that? Because sometimes people are saying, well, Matt, how can I get into the market? We don't have a lot of cash. We're not into it to the extent that the money could make anything. Well, if you'll take these small blips on the radar, invest, and just be patient for even a short period of time, you might have increase the amount of cash you have available. Now, sometimes you're talking about small amounts, but sometimes you're not. And then you put them into the long-range situations like defense that I spell out. Another one being the dollar. Right now, we knew the dollar was going to tighten. We heard earlier on your own broadcast about the Fed and their situation, and we know that that caused the dollar to tighten. Well, when the dollar tightens, there are certain stocks that do very well, like the old Philip Morris here in the U.S., it's called Altria, because they're only selling here in the United States because they have great price elasticity. They're able to do a phenomenal job, and you've seen Altria really grow during the time period the dollar's become strong, and they pay about a 4% dividend, so you're making money even as you sit and see if that stock's going to continue to grow.
We have just about a minute or a minute and a half left, but give us some clues, if you would, about what you see out there now that might be driving our portfolios in the future.
Well, I wrote in Newsvesting at the end of the book, and it was just as we were going into the end of 2015. Right now, I see the following. I see continued instability overseas, so I think these defense stocks are going to do well. The dollar is going to stay strong for a while, so you're going to want to be in these companies that do well when the dollar is strong. In other words, domestic companies that are strong. Another thing that I see is I think the economy is rather sluggish. The IMF warned us last year. We should have all been prepared for that, so I'm not expecting big things this year. But finally, I do think someday, if you have the patience, to invest in those strong oil companies that get big dividends. I mean, I'm talking about big companies like ConocoPhillips, ExxonMobil, and the like. Someday, may take another year or two, that you're suddenly going to find demand coming back up. Supply will shrink as it will over time as they choke off these smaller companies that do shale and the like, and you're going to find a tremendous profit in these large oil companies. At least that's what I said in Newsvesting, and the overall portfolio I bought was up over 33% during the time that I was working on this book.
Matt Towery is a nationally syndicated columnist, pollster, attorney, political strategist, even a former state legislator, so he knows what he's talking about. His book is called Newsvesting. You can find out more at newsvesting.com, at Twitter, at Matt Towery. Matt, thanks for being on the Opening Bell this morning.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Have a nice day. It's 5:26, and coming up, we'll have the latest news. It is Iowa Caucus Day. That's ahead with Vic. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. It's 5:37. Despite all the new regulations you've been hearing about commercial drones, including new rules put in place by the Federal Aviation Administration, the commercial drone market's actually exploding, and now there is a drone racing league.
DRL is professional drone racing. First-person view drone racing is a new sport, exploding in popularity.
That's a promotional video from the Drone Racing League on Twitter at Drone Race League. Joining us for a conversation this morning about the business of robotics and drones is Dan Kara from ABI Research, where he keeps tabs on all things technical, specifically robots, robotics and automation, on Twitter at ABI_Dan, K-A-R-A, Dan Kara. Dan, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you. The explosion in the commercial drone market surprised me, considering all I've heard in the news about all of the regulations and all of the scares with these drones near airports. How big of an explosion has it been, and is it?
Well, I think it's important when you talk about the commercial drone marketplace, there's multiple marketplaces, and they're all actually doing very well. So they can range all the way. Let's leave it at the small drone marketplace, small unmanned aerial vehicles, because that's where most of the innovation is taking place, and that's where most of the investment's going in, and that's where most of the excitement and is occurring at this time. But that includes stuff ranging from, say, the military stuff all the way to the consumer and toy marketplace. So all of those marketplaces, going from the military and security marketplace to the civil marketplace, so those would be, say, the universities using it, or non-governmental agencies or governments using it for things other than military purposes, to the pure commercial devices. And then there's something called the toy marketplace, certainly, or the consumer marketplace. And then there's this one in between the commercial and the toy industries, this prosumer and hobbyist marketplace, where really where much of the energy has been focused at this particular time. So it's doing very, very well. And so the size of the marketplace in terms of revenues, I mean, at ABI, we looked at, and I'm going to break this down into just commercial. So corporations typically buy these, or governmental agencies or something. And then the consumer, which is bought by individuals for their own personal use. We look at that marketplace, and in 2014, it was about $2.4 billion for the commercial, and now it's moving up to about $3.8 billion for the commercial. And then in 2015, and then 2014 for the consumer, it was much less in terms of just revenue. It was only around $55 million moving up. $500 million moving up to about $750 million in 2015. When you think in terms of the commercial drone marketplace, there's a lot of other things that go into that, not just the airframe hardware. So you have the service, a whole services marketplace, just to focus on providing services. These could be things such as, say, legal services, for example, or it could be other types of enabling technologies. It could be application services. A lot of the investment going in from companies like Intel and Sony and a variety of others are focusing on data services. So they just use the drone actually just to collect data. And where the money is being made is in back-end services to analyze this data in a variety of different ways, using different types of sensors and new applications, and making it available to people anywhere in the world, anytime that they want it. And then there's certainly just support services. So this would be new componentry, new payload options, and that sort of thing. So in a commercial space, it's not just limited to the actual hardware. In the consumer space, there are things that you can get. Of course, there's operating systems, aerial operating systems. There's other types of payloads. But for the most part, you're really dealing with the platform as you buy it and take it out of the box. So hence the difference in the two different revenue figures. For the commercial, it's the drones and a whole pile of other stuff.
And so there's an obvious investment opportunity here that I want to get into in a minute, but this is timely. We're having this discussion because we learned last week that Google was granted a patent for its drone delivery product. We know that Amazon has kind of been thinking about this. Are these real things that we're going to see, drones delivering things on our streets?
You know, that's the first question that I get asked, and when we're out speaking to our clients and all the rest of it. And to tell you the truth, it's really up in the air at this time. Where you do know where there is money to be made, and where you see all the companies going is, I will tell you, into this commercial sphere. So if you look at, for example, the companies who make sort of the hobbyist drone technology. So they have a drone that's around $900, for example. So a kid's not going to be using it for the most part, and it's not quite a commercial grade. All of those companies are trying now, are coming out with new platforms that are much more functional. They're investing in other types of applications. They're moving into niche vertical market segments like agriculture or mining or a variety of other things. At the same time, you have the DoD guys who have a lot of small drones. They're moving sort of downstream into the commercial space as fast as they possibly can. What you don't see is anybody kind of in the commercial sphere moving into the toy space. And there's reasons for that. That's a, you know, kind of a bloody marketplace, and there's a lot of players in there. It's very easy to get into that marketplace. So to get back to your question, where we can absolutely, you know, say that there is going to be use of drones are in those marketplaces where there's a lot of money and a huge amount of need, and a lot of money where if you get just an incremental, minuscule amount of greater productivity or some other type of advantage, these industries are willing to pay big money. So agriculture, mining, forestry, I mean, you know, oil and gas go right down the line. In terms of the delivery stuff, at least in my own opinion, it starts to get a little vague. On one hand, you have these large companies making real investments, sizable investments to do this. So you often hear, for example, when Amazon would come out with, you know, another advertisement right before Black Monday that they were going to have delivery drones. I mean, it's very easy to kind of say, well, it's just a marketing ploy, which to a large degree it is. But in fact, there are, you know, researchers, there are engineers working on this all the time. The same thing with a lot of the other big players. In terms of delivery, though, there's more than just the regulatory hurdles. And in some circles, it just seems like, well, it's, you know, it's a technology thing, and then past that, it's a regulatory issue. That's all. That's basically all there is to it. When in fact, there are other types of things. I mean, this call is coming from Chicago. I live in Boston. There are times when, you know, independent of the regulations, if all the technology falls in place and all the regulations fall in place, there are times where it's just simply impossible to deliver things using a drone. So you have those types of environmental issues. There's issues related to noise. There's issues related to privacy, which I don't think is going to be that important. But there's large groups in the industry that think that's going to be important. So you have a lot of headwinds there. Never mind, you know, just the business models that required in order to make this work. I have seen people writing about the business models. There does seem to be a case. I mean, in terms of someone like Amazon, you're on top of this as much as anybody, and you know the difficulties in terms of, you know, hitting their numbers and actually becoming revenue, becoming positive in terms of their profitability, that they need to do things about how they handle delivery and how they handle sort of distribution issues. So back in 2012, Amazon bought Kiva Systems, which makes a unmanned ground robot, a mobile service robot, for $775 million at the time, just so they could get that one little bit of competitive advantage to speed up their automation processes and distribution centers. Here it's the same type of thing. This is trying to use technology to basically reduce the costs, some of their costs, and speed up delivery so it gives them a new type of way to sell into people with this drone technology. But as they move forward, there are still these other issues. Again, regulatory issues and technology issues, in my own opinion, are serious hurdles, but they are not the primary hurdles. Once those are overcome, there's still other types of things.
Dan Kara of ABI Research in Boston. You can find more about his research and more on commercial drones, abiresearch.com, and the Twitter account, again, is @ABI_DanKara. Dan, thanks for being on The Opening Bell this morning.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:50. Good morning. Welcome back to the program. If you are a concert goer, a sports fanatic, you buy tickets to anything, this is probably going to burn you just like it is me. When you go to buy tickets and it's sold out within like a couple seconds, you have to be scratching your head saying, what's going on here? Phil Rosenthal of the Chicago Tribune has been writing about this, and the New York State Attorney General has actually been investigating this. Phil, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning.
This is something that really just grinds my gears, and that is when you go to buy these tickets and they're gone, you have found, I mean, it's about time there, first of all, that there's an investigation, but what has it found?
Well, Eric Schneiderman, the New York Attorney General, did the heavy lifting on this, a three-year investigation in which he found most of the seats aren't available to the general public when the official opening of sales begins, that there are these illegal bots or software programs that enable them to not only buy far more tickets than they really are supposed to, you know, there are ticket limits on how many you can purchase, but get the best seats in unbelievably fast time. He found a U2 concert. His tickets went on sale near the end of 2014. It was a 2015 concert. One buyer, a single buyer with a software program and some American Express cards that were in a variety of names, managed to get more than a thousand tickets in the first minute the tickets went on sale. When you wonder why while you're basically logging on, everything's gone, that's one of the reasons. But also, you know, Ticketmaster estimates maybe 60% of the tickets for the most in-demand concerts are gone before the official opening of sales through pre-sales, either peddled to credit card companies or to industry insiders, that sort of thing. It's really, as the Attorney General said, a fixed game.
It almost sounds a little bit like, and I don't want to accuse anybody of anything, but racketeering. It almost sounds like, you know, the outfit is in control here. And I guess some artists are getting upset about this if they haven't already been. And do you think we'll see any meaningful change?
I don't know. You know, this is the thing. It's I think you could see greater enforcement on the bot front, on the software front. You know, the Ticketmaster and some of these other sellers have things you should be able to try and foil it, but obviously they're not at all effective. I could see some legislation, but I don't know. You know, one of the problems with tickets is, in a lot of cases, almost all cases, the list price, the supposed face value of a ticket is usually below what the market rate is because for a variety of reasons. They don't want, the original seller doesn't want to gouge. They don't want to play. They want more people to have access to the tickets. I don't know if that changes. I do think you could see some reduction of the fees. That's a whole other level, that the fees on these tickets, you know, you'll pay a huge fee for handling from the original seller when you, in fact, have printed out the ticket yourself. So I'm not sure how much handling there is. That fee could certainly be made to come down. But again, I don't know. It's like a lot of things. The people who run these rackets are better at the game than the people selling, and maybe it's not in the seller's interest all the time.
Yeah, and we don't want to – go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say we don't want to sully every one of these ticket brokers because I'm sure there are some of them doing it by the book. You even mentioned this in your story.
Mm-hmm. You can make a lot of money doing that.
Yeah. So, I guess, can we go back to the day where we humans stood in line and waited for tickets?
I don't know. You know, I think it doesn't seem like that happens in anything else we do. I do think you could see greater requirements that the person who buys that, you know, to eliminate the resale market, that you know, you require people to come by the, you know, and show ID when they come. On the other hand, I think that probably in some ways drives the tickets up, the price up, because then there are even fewer tickets out there, and the people that get them either improperly or hoard the tickets somehow, they're going to be able to name their price. It's a bit of a mess, and part of it is, again, I think the promoters and some of the sellers, they have their own interests in driving up these prices, and maybe they profit from it.
Did the New York Attorney General, were there charges filed in this case, or will there be?
There were a couple of cases where they settled with some companies for illegal activities. The larger picture is he was proposing some you know, legislative ideas. I'm not sure how realistic they are. I mean, one of the things was a, quote, reasonable cap on resale prices. I don't know how you know what reasonable is. I know what unreasonable is. I can recognize that in a heartbeat. But to legislate it, I think would be difficult. There were some charges with the illegal bots and that sort of thing. But you know, again, the credit card companies have to know some of this stuff is going on. The sellers have to know, and there has to be sort of this, you know, check back and let's see if you're a real person or you're just a phantom.
Phil Rosenthal of the Chicago Tribune. You can find him on Twitter at Phil_Rosenthal. His story is online at chicagotribune.com. Phil, thanks for being with us this morning.
Always a pleasure.
It is 5:57. That'll do it for our show today. Our producer is on a vacation, a day off today, Mary Sandberg. We want to thank her for getting things set up today. Also, Ross Cochran, who's filling in for her. Griffin Filipich, who's also providing some production help for us today. Our engineer is Bob Ferguson. Steve Cochran Show is live at the Iowa caucuses coming up next. Have a great day. It's 5:57.